You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, what would you do if you were possessed by an ancient god and also your sister was a rhino? Claudia and Rex, no. Plus, Cobra Commander targets the Energon, the Holy Roller targets anti-Semitism, Maeve finds out what happens when the blood has dried. Steven Schleicher, educator, podcaster, searching for a way to tap into the hidden nerdery that all humans possess. An accidental overdose of Silver Age comic dust alters his body chemistry, and now, when Steven grows angry or outraged, a startling metamorphosis occurs. The podcast is driven by rage, and it's on the air.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to issue 1068 of the Major Spoilers Podcast. So glad that you're here. I'm very happy that you are here this week. The secret, Matthew, is I'm always angry. Hey, listen, if you want to have our gut reactions to the new X-Men comics, if you're wanting to find out what we think about the new Acolyte trailer that has just dropped, or maybe Teen Titans, or maybe just our general thoughts in how Netflix kind of ruins their franchise stuff by drawing it out too long, then you need to head over to our pre-show. And the only place you can listen to the Major Spoilers Podcast pre-show is at patreon.com/majorspoilers. We talk about all of that and more. It's exclusive, silver leveling up. It's one of the many exclusive things you get over at our Patreon page, patreon.com/majorspoilers. Come and join us. Join us. Join us.
One of us.
Yeah, let's do some reviews. One of us is going to do a review, and I predict it's going to be Matthew.
Hey, everybody.
Look, I was right. Hey, Matthew.
How's it going? So, out tomorrow, or today, I guess, out today from Image Comics, The Holy Roller number 5, written by Rick Remender, Joe Troman, and Andy Samberg, art by Morena Denisio. If you haven't been paying attention, The Holy Roller is my new favorite goofy superhero as the guest writer's alternate persona. So, you know, we had that book where it's like, hey, this one's written by Keanu, and suddenly the character looks just like Keanu. And this one's written by John Leguizamo, and the character looks just like John Leguizamo. So the Holy Roller is a man named Levi, and Levi looks just like Andy Samberg. But his father used to be a professional bowler, and so he has powered armor. Instead of bats, he uses bowling balls. And I got to tell you, if you're going to be hit in the head with something, I would rather be hit in the head with a batarang than a bowling ball. Because, I mean, one, yes, I'm going to get some stitches. The other, I'm going to have serious, serious brain damage. But after last issue, Levi's first big mission has gone very well. He has managed to knock out a whole sect of the neo-Nazis that are secretly running his city. So he's gone home to smoke weed and play Nintendo with his best friend. Like you do. I mean, presumably, if it's legal where you live. But the interesting part of this is the first part of the issue really feels like one of those moments where this is the idea. This was something that they wanted to put in here. And what happens is Levi is sitting there and he's talking to his best friend. And he's like, oh, man, I need your help. His best friend, of course, is the engineer, the guy who builds all of his equipment, right? So he's just sitting here, and Jamal explains to him why he's not going to make his own armor. He's like, look, I'm your sidekick. I'm black. I will be dead. One of three things will happen. And he runs down the three things that will happen. Either I'll go into the field with you and get killed, or I'll get killed to fuel your angry revenge, or somebody will grab me and force you to choose between me and your dad, and you'll have to choose, and I'll die. So he's like, I'll continue making your equipment, but there's no way I'm going to ever, ever go into the field with you as the Holy Roller. And it's a two-page discussion that really feels like, here's the hook. Here's the part where they sat down and these writers were like, we got to get this in there, and we got to get that in there. And we definitely need to have a picture of Jamal dressed up as the pin pal with a head that looks like a bowling pin. I'm totally down with that. It makes perfect sense to me. But the rest of the issue kind of goes into a territory that I feel like Stephen might like and Stephen might hate, because we've had recent discussions about how taking real world politics and situations and putting them in the books is interesting. So the Holy Roller goes undercover at a new neo-Nazi rally. They're new
nice.
Neo-Nazis.
Punch all Nazis. Punch all neo-Nazis.
Right.
Make but punching the Nazis new again.
The thing that they have is the meeting is to watch a film that has been painstakingly rebuilt. And by painstakingly rebuilt, I mean it's entirely fake, explaining how in his last moments, Adolf Hitler agreed that, oh, well, with a little hindsight, I may have made an oopsie. And so he was ready to forgive. He was ready to say, I apologize. But a robot called the Tolerant Tech Bro Futurist comes and kills him. And that's why the neo-Nazis believe that he was a good man who just wanted to say he was sorry. And that's why it's okay for them to build their new holographic Hitler.
Well, this sounds a lot like the side conversation that we had about a certain Power Ranger last week.
Doesn't it?
That's
I feel
weird.
Like if this hadn't been written like 6 or 8 weeks, you know, or months in advance, I feel like they could have been listening to us. Also, it may just be that Hitler apologists are in the zeitgeist. But
punch
the rest of the issue.
Punch them too. That's what
right?
I suggest.
The rest of the issue does something that I kind of appreciate in that it turns into a Batman mission. But Levi, the Holy Roller, is not Batman. He is just a kid who, you know, has some training and has cool armor and throws a bowling ball at your head. So it's a Batman mission, but it goes the way you would expect if it was realistically happening in the real world, which I think is kind of nice and also kind of played out. Comic books have been, you know, messing with that for years, but I feel like the thing that really pushes this back up to where the final score is the unexpected ending. And it's even better that the unexpected ending of this issue should have been expected. I should have seen it coming. It is a well-known trope, and I'm not going to tell you what it is because that will in fact tell you where we're going for the second half of the Holy Roller's arc. And I want you to buy this issue. I want you to buy the Holy Roller number 5, 4 slices of meatloaf. It is a very good comic. It looks fabulous. The art looks really, really good. It looks like Andy Samberg, but it also looks like Andy Samberg as a superhero. And if I have any chance at all, I'm going to continue to follow Roland Boshi, who handles the art, because he has a really cool style. Really nice looking, like technological elements and bits and pieces, but also a character who is literally almost a cartoon parody of Judd Hirsch, looks cool and fits in with the whole zeitgeist. And if you've not read any of the Holy Roller, I'm sure that there will be a trade paperback out here in the next minute or two, because, you know, if you get 5 issues, you put out a trade paperback. But highly recommended. 4 slices of meatloaf for the Holy Roller number 5 from Image. Have you guys been reading this?
No. I see 2 different artists listed on this. I see Marina Denisio and Roland Boshi. Is there flashback moments?
Moreno handles the colors.
Okay.
Roland Boshi is the artist, but Moreno handles the colors. And the way the colors are done, essentially, they're both listed as artists, essentially, okay. Because, yeah. Yeah, so it's kind of like the old days when you'd have your penciler and your inker, but they're both responsible. Yeah, it's like that.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, because they just, they're separated. Usually you see artists all listed together, yeah. And this one is listed her as artist, and then, or Moreno listed as artist, and then Roland as artist and cover artist, you know, after cover, the other cover artist. So I don't know. It's a little bit weird how they have these listed. So there you go. That is out this week from Image Comics, creator owned. Hey, listen, with Berserker, we know that it is soon to be a major motion picture television event podcast show of some kind. Does this feel like Sandberg is trying to set up a deal with Netflix or Hulu or Amazon or something?
Maybe. The character portrayed, Andy is way too old to play the character now, because the character portrayed is like 25 and Andy is in his, you know, early 40s, but I would not put it past them. I would be unsurprised if this popped up as like a Netflix property, or I'd rather see it as an animated series on, honestly, and have Andy actually voice Levi. I think that would be better, but yeah, I would be unsurprised if this pops up in other media.
Okay. Matthew, while I'm talking about Cobra Commander number 3, I want you to head over to the review thing and open up to the last page of Cobra Commander number 3, because I got a question at the end, because there's a big double page splash at the end of the issue, and I'm kind of like,
okay,
I have no idea who this is, because of course I know everything about G.I. Joe and all related G.I. Joe properties. And so that is why a few months ago I picked up Cobra Commander number 1 and was very keen on looking at the early years of Cobra Commander. You know, back when his best friend Paul and he would wander the earth with next door neighbor Winnie and reminisce about the wonder years that were G.I. Joe. But this week from Skybound Entertainment, it's Cobra Commander number 3 from Joshua Williamson's with art by Andrea Milani. And this picks up immediately after issue number 2. So if you didn't read issue number 2, you're going to go into this going, what happened? Who are these people? And of course, the people that Cobra Commander in issue 2 separated himself from his companion and went wandering in the swamps of Florida. And who do we know that wanders in the swamps of Florida or bases themselves in the swamps of Florida? That's right. The Dreadnoughts. The Dreadnoughts are a big, bad force of bad guys in the swamps. And so they're all there. You can go look up the list of all the Dreadnoughts. Most of the main group's names all start with Z. And then, of course, you got Buzzsaw and Ripper are also members Ripper of this as well. So they have captured Cobra Commander at the end of issue 2. And issue number 3 is... it is a torture issue. It is literally page after page of Cobra Commander being tortured by various members of the Dreadnoughts and him not reacting to any of the torture that they are putting on him. Now, if you remember when I talked about issue number 1, there's things that happen off panel when bloody things happen. That does happen in this issue as well, but this really feels like the worst parts of Saw come to life in this issue. I mean, Cobra Commander isn't inflicting... I mean, he's not inflicting the pain on himself. It is literally blowtorches and hacksaws and chainsaws and all of these things. And of course, Cobra Commander uses whatever powers that he has to turn the Dreadnoughts on to, against themselves so that it gives him a moment to escape. Where in the final page, his companion shows up and rips off his skin and reveals himself to be who, Matthew?
Oh my God, it's Nemesis Enforcer.
Oh my God, ladies and gentlemen, Nemesis Enforcer. You know Nemesis Enforcer from that thing that we all love. Of course. Obviously.
The movie, 1986. Nemesis Enforcer is a strange mutated creature from the land of Cobra Law.
Yes. Cobra! And we do get a flashback. We do get a flashback to Nemesis Enforcer's origin, where they basically, from his point of view, they're like, hey, Globulus needs your help. and we need you to follow Cobra Commander because we think that he is doing something nefarious. And so then they throw one of these squid things on his face. And so that's how he comes out looking like a big, tall, you know, Adolph Lundgren type throughout the first two issues, but then rips off his skin here for the big reveal. Sorry, spoiler alert, everybody. But here's the thing that you need to know. This is I think for what this issue is, it is well written and well crafted in the sense that somebody who is a complete psychopath would shrug off all sorts of torture and laugh it off and then turn his powers on the Dreadnoks so that they start infighting to give him his point to escape. And then his secret weapon shows up. And of course we don't know what's going to happen because that's next issue. So I was confused because of course I've only watched the G.I. Joe, the movie from 1986, only like a dozen times. So, you know, I've kind of forgotten a lot of the stuff that went on in that movie. And so in previous issues, in issue number one of Cobra Commander, we found out what happened to Megatron. So when we jump into issue three and we're seeing the flashback, part of me was like, did they transform Megatron into like a human robot transformer? And then, of course, Matthew, you know, spoiled it all for you. And now we realize exactly what's going on. Hey, the name of the show is Major Spoilers, so people knew what was coming on. But we do also find out that there is an Energon tube, whatever you're going to call it, a cube in Florida. That's what everybody is doing. Yes. Cobra Commander can use that to power great weapons. And so I can't wait. I really can't wait to see what happens next in this series because it's going in places that I never thought. Again, for those of you who grew up watching the G.I. Joe cartoons and how sanitized those were, the stuff that's happening in these comics, holy crap. Ronald Reagan's head would be spinning over all of this stuff. You would see the FCC clamping down on shows like Conan and He-Man and G.I. Joe and the rest super fast just because of the content that's in here being marketed to kids. So part of me likes where this is going. Part of me also is just like, I really didn't need a whole issue of mostly torture, right? And that's mostly what this issue is torture. And so I really didn't need that because that's not something that I am keen on. That being said, some other people's reviews that I have read this week are all on to the torture aspect of it. They think it's pretty groovy. I don't know if that says more about them than it does about me. I don't know. But if you don't mind torture, if you're into that Saw kind of stuff, if you want to see Cobra Commander get his, but also give it in return. And of course, you want to see, old school villains, enforcer generals show up to do something surprising on the last page. Then Cobra Commander number three is definitely for you. I'm going to give this 4 slices of meatloaf out of 5. I enjoyed it, but a little turned off by the excessive violence, even though a lot of it does happen off panel. So there you go. That is out this week from Skybound Entertainment. Rodrigo, we're going to jump ahead with some more spoilers for things coming out in April, all the way in the future.
In the future, I'm looking at When the Blood Has Dried, number one.
Ooh.
So when that happens, it's all the way in April.
Yeah.
So this is a comic where the story happens is like a medieval-ish fantasy world. You have elves and dwarves and humans, and it's appears to be the story of a lady named Maeve who crossed a guild of adventurers, and this isn't just like 5 adventurers, it's like the guild is like a lot of people in multiple locations.
Yeah.
Has since gone underground, but now things are starting to look like she's gonna get pulled back in. I didn't love this one. I know that, like, if you listen to my reviews of Matt Cave books, usually I'm very positive about them. I think this one just has a few things that I don't like, starting with, like, it's, you know, a fantasy world with elves and dwarves. Like, I'm tired. I'm so tired. of that, like, shorthand for magical stuff. And but of course, you know, people are like, hey, Rodrigo, don't be a jerk. You really like Delicious in Dungeon, which has elves and dwarves. And I'm like, yeah, but Delicious in Dungeon is doing a meta commentary on Dungeons and Dragons and adventuring parties and the ridiculousness of the mechanics that exist to continue adventuring, right? This isn't doing that. This is doing something else. And I'm not saying that it would have to do that. It could be doing something else that I like, but it's not doing something else that I like. Mm-hmm. The art is good. That's absolutely fine. The characters are somewhat interesting, but also seem, again, there's a lot, like, it feels to me as I'm reading this that there's a lot of shorthand. It's like, oh, here's a gruff dwarf. Here's like a fancy pants elf. Like, all of these are characters that we've sort of seen in one way or another. And the book doesn't do enough in this very first issue to be like, well, here's what's different and interesting about this character. So altogether, I'm going to give it 2.5 slices of meatloaf.
All right.
You know, it's solidly average. And I think if you're more into this stuff, it'll probably be above average for you. But for me, there's nothing wrong with the comic, right? There's like nothing where I'm like, this is bad or this art is bad or this writing is bad. It's just kind of doing some stuff that I've seen a lot before and I'm kind of tired of it. And that's only partially the comic's fault.
Yeah, so it sounds like if this were, and maybe this is just a failing into this type of story, into this adventure type story, that is, you're kind of losing steam on. Not that there's maybe anything wrong with the book, but maybe it's also a little bit, I'm kind of burned out on this.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, it's like, obviously, this is a review. If you are someone who, you know, that's the like critics, like feel a certain way about things, right? So, if you've heard my reviews and generally you like the stuff that I've reviewed positively, then you can listen to this and be like, well, I don't know if I'm as burnt out as Rodrigo's at, but like, I have just seen just so many comics, like so many comics that use this, like, elf dwarf fantasy land shorthand and don't really do anything with it. Don't explore it. Don't do anything interesting. Like, I know that there's a lot of controversy around something like Rat Queens, but Rat Queens was another comic that, like Delicious in Dungeon, looked at this fantasy D&D specifically kind of ideas and explored them and sort of made them interesting by looking at the stuff that we just assume normally happens and actually, you know, pulling up the cover and being like, well, how would this actually work with characters that, like, were intelligent and did things? And that's not with this, with When the Blood Has Dried, it just feels like it's part of the setting. And I guess that's okay. It's so common. But for me, it just, like, immediately throws up not necessarily a red flag, but, like, what's a boring, a gray flag.
There you go.
Right. And there's an old saying about how a story is one thing, your characters are one thing, but if your story begins with, like, even I love superheroes, but if I hear something goes, a superhero who dot, dot, dot.
Who turns evil?
I've seen a million stories. Yeah, I've seen 100 million superhero type stories. At this point, I really do want this to stand out, and I feel like probably since Lord of the Rings, maybe even earlier, it's just like, okay, you guys remember Tolkien? Okay, we're in that ballpark. Now go.
Yeah,
and that's not necessarily bad. It's just not.
Yeah, know, and I think there's people who look for this kind of thing.
Oh yeah,
right?
Yeah,
they are comfortable with this sort of setting. And so they just completely plugged in. You know, it's like, I'm comfortable with this sort of setting, but the problem is, like, I'm too comfortable with this sort of setting. I'm like tired of it by now.
Yeah, no, I get it. And thank you for your some clarification on that, and to let people know that it's not, you know, it's not a poo-poo book. There's also some other things going on too. So, and that's also with me when I talk about having tired of capes and tights type stories and what are other things that are out there in comics.
It's like, yeah, and it is just that. It's just like if you come out with a superhero book now, there has to be something else about it. Like, either you're exploring it or Andy Samberg is in it or something like that, right? You need something new. And like slightly mysterious circumstances in a fantasy world is like, yeah, that's, we've seen that.
That's Jerry Brewer. That's a million.
That's every day.
Yep. That's Amore. All right. Thank you, Rodrigo. Thank you, Matthew. And thank you, dear listener, for everything that you do for us. You are the awesome people out there because you're listening to the show. You're talking about this show. You're sharing the show with all of your fans around the world. And listen, I mentioned at the top of the show that we had a whole discussion about some really cool things that have happened in the world of comics and pop culture in this past week. And the only way that you could get it is by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. When you sign up at the silver level or higher, you get access to the Major Spoilers pre-show, at least 4 exclusive shows per month. And since the beginning of the show, one Philip Smallwood listened and heard us and said, I'm going to go sign up. So Philip Smallwood is our newest silver level patron. So thank you, Philip, for that. And listeners, if Philip can do it, then so can you. It's so easy to join our growing community of spoilerites at patreon.com/majorspoilers. And when you join, we'll give you a shout out right here on the show, just like Philip got. Again, patreon.com/majorspoilers. Now, you can give us more money if you would like. That would be awesome. Gold and silver, gold level members and associate producer members all get even more stuff when they sign up at patreon.com/majorspoilers. And you're sitting there on the edge of your seat going, what is it? What can I get when I sign up to be a gold member? That would be spoiling. And even though I did tell you who, or even though Matthew did spoil Cobra Commander number 3 for you, I'm not going to spoil it for you. You're going to have to find out for yourself by going to patreon.com/majorspoilers and check out those perks that you get at the gold and associate producer levels. Who's going to sign up next week? Maybe it'll be you. Maybe it'll be you. Maybe it will be you.
Do not throw me under the bus. When you're like, hey, can you tell me who this guy on the last plate?
Matthew's been framed so bad.
You've got to play along, Matthew. You have to play along. That's the fun of it.
I don't know. It wasn't me. It was a one-armed man.
I respond, I don't care. Anyway, speaking of things that we may or may not care about, this week, it's Claudia and Rex Volume 1. Really, we should just call it Claudia and Rex by itself because it's only 3 issues that comprise this volume. And I haven't seen hide nor hair from Lionforge Comics that there's a follow-up to this series. It came out in November of 2017 in its collected form. I don't know when the first issue dropped, probably 6 months before that. But Rodrigo, this was a recommendation that we review on the show by you. So why don't you break it down for us? Why don't you go in and tell us all about the Claudia and Rex?
So Claudia and Rex is the story of a family. It's a mom and 2 kids. And they are moving away. They've recently lost the father. And everybody's kind of dealing with the grief, and they're going to sell their house and move for a new job in Seattle. So that's page 1. Page 2. All the gods are dying. It is a god war in the heavens. Gods are trying to escape as lightning bolts and biblically accurate angels are trying to, assimilate them into the great, what was it, like the great?
The great harmonics or great frequency or something.
Yeah,
it's
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just blanking on it. But yeah, so, and then there's several pages of that. And the moment that you get accustomed to that, they cut back to like a road trip. Claudia, the eponymous Claudia, is a teenager, like a young teenager. She's very much going through a rebellious phase. And at the end, we find out also has something additionally going on that is making her particularly difficult to deal with, I think.
Yeah.
Her little sister is Claudia. Her little sister is Rex, and they suddenly the two storylines collide, and then we see what happens when Claudia and Rex have access to the divine powers of the creatures that are sort of trying to escape their godly doom.
All right, so I think we should approach this with everybody having 3 points that they want to talk about on this. or three thoughts on this. My first thought is, holy crap, biblically accurate illustrations of seraphim and angels. I was like, holy crap, very good. I give you high praise. Daniel Irizarry, I believe is how you say the last name. If I'm mispronouncing it, hey, welcome to the show. I'm Stephen Schleicher. I can't pronounce anybody's name. So I really dug the art in this book. I liked it a lot. So that's kind of my first take is you had me with biblically accurate angels. Thoughts, reactions, etc.
Yeah, absolutely.
I saw that, and I did not remember the part about Rodrigo saying this was a recommendation. The moment I saw that, I went, oh, man, Rodrigo is going to love this. because he has literally played a biblically accurate angel before.
My second thought is, I love how we take all of these different gods, all these various gods, and how they're being threatened by the high wave form, which I'm curious if you guys interpreted it as the quote unquote Judeo-Christian God or not in this case. Which is somewhat a little problematic, but also, okay, I can deal with that. That's, you know, that's how gods become more powerful as more followers, etc. But I really like how the gods led by Death, who comes up with this scheme, and by not Dreams, I forget who the his compatriot
there are, like Thanatos and Hypnos.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're all like Dreams. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey gods, why don't we come and we'll go to Earth and we'll become mortals. And they all end up getting stuck into Claudia's cell phone. And so they are powering her through the power of cell phone apps. And I thought that was a rather ingenious way of telling this story.
Yeah. For me, I read that high wave form as literally social media, digital communication.
Oh, okay.
Well, all of the things that people can complain about, you know, the Zoomers and the Zillennials being like, oh man, they're always on their phones. It felt to me like that was somehow coalescing into a new god.
Mm. I just saw that the biblically accurate angels and seraphim and Nephilim seemed to be more like that type of a god killing all the rest, especially when the others are, for many people, maybe not even known god types. And they kind of mention that throughout the book. So that's why I brought that up. And I guess the other thing was third thought for me is that this was a short story. I mean, three issues. Yes. Granted, it's I think they're 40 pages each issue or something like that. Maybe I'm misthinking on that. But this book, because it is a straight up adventure of let's get the gods to the world tree and get them reborn, it just moved so quickly that before I knew it, the series was over and I was like, that's it. So I kind of felt a little let down that it was only three issues.
Yeah. When you talked about the Claudia interacting with the gods through apps on her phone, it's like, that wants to be something. It's like, so Claudia has like all of these gods that she can, whose power she can access. Rex has one god in her soul hitching a ride that allows her to basically change shape into anything she wants. And she's obsessed with like prehistoric mammals.
Yeah.
So she turns like the first thing she turns into is a woolly rhino, and she turns into multiple other like weird extinct little critters as the story goes. And I'm like, by the end of this, I was like, well, there's so much more that they could have done with this. They could have still kept it a straightforward adventure where, you know, they're just trying to get from point A to point B. But there's all of these interesting sort of like complications or just visual things. If each god has, that is, with Claudia, appears as an app, it would be funny and interesting to be what sort of real world apps they resemble, or if they using their powers through a cell phone, cell phoneifies their powers, right? Where somebody is like, I will lend you like my magic spear. And then she has to wait for somebody to deliver the magic spear. And it just keeps telling her that the magic spear is two stops away, you know, something like that. There's lots of stuff like that we could have seen. And I'm not saying that they would have done exactly that, but I feel like a lot of stuff we don't see is simply because this is three issues and it's so short. Yeah. And I think every issue is like 20 pages, 20, 24, 25 pages.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, not even 80 page giant then by the time you get
it really hauls.
Yeah, it really does. So I think that was the thing that I was probably disappointed in, is that it was such a short book and I wanted to have more time to. And because this didn't come out, you know, I'm reading this all in one go, and this didn't come out monthly or whatever the release was. I didn't have time to really stop and think, or I, you know, we read other books where I get to the end of a quote unquote issue and I'm like, oh, okay, so this happened and this happened and this happened, and I can contemplate on that. But that didn't happen here. It was just like, now I don't know who the Aztec or Incan god was that is trying to kill all of the gods. But it's just like, oh, now this guy's showing up and killing stuff. And it moved so fast. I didn't have time to stop and think. And so I was sad about that. So, Rodrigo, why don't you share your three thoughts on Claudia and Rex?
Three thoughts. So my first thought is that the art is really good.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like really interesting and unique. If you look at something like Kill 6 Billion Demons, it kind of lives in this area as well, but mm-hmm. I don't think you would confuse the two. It definitely has a very strong sort of, it's like awesome and cool, but it's also like very cute. There's a lot of cuteness to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys.
No, I mean, too. Yeah, no, especially with Rex and some of the things that she's doing. And of course, some of the gods that are the background gods are kind of drawn kind of cutesy like. Mm-hmm. Even the world tree is drawn in a style that is that way. So, no, I see where you're coming from.
OK. Point number two. I thought that. Weirdly, and I think, again, this is partially because it's so short. I felt like when we got close to the ending, things became progressively less clear.
Mm-hmm.
Like at some point, the mom develops a power, and it's been sort of foreshadowed that there's a god that they haven't found. And I guess that one went into the mom.
Yeah. And they don't really point out in the story. Because there are, like 20 or 30 gods that are all in part of this scheme that come to Earth. And so we don't know who they are besides Death and Thantos and Hypnos. So we don't know who that is. And it's only spoken of kind of between the high waveform and I'm guessing it's the Mesoamerican god, whatever that character is, that it's this god that's been undiscovered. And so I would have liked to know a little bit more about that.
Yeah, that's the other thing is that. The high waveform wants to like absorb all the gods, but apparently they still must exist in some way, right? The implication really seems that the guy that's coming after them mm-hmm. is a god that has been like subsumed into it, right? As opposed to like a creation of theirs, unless this god is very much them being like, okay, we don't actually want to say that this is like the Judeo-Christian god eating all the other gods.
Right.
So we'll have some of his servants be like other types of gods.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's why the big meanie of the series looks the way that he does.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's some stuff that's not very clear. I think the god that the mom ends up with is the god that transports them to Earth to begin with.
Mm. Okay.
It's not super clear. And then, you know, at the end, it's like they kind of finally do the thing and, you know, like there's like a family moment and that's nice. But yeah, like immediately leading up to that, like everything gets like a little bit. A particle effecty, and it's kind of hard to figure out exactly what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. Yeah. I would agree. All right. That was your three, Rodrigo, or is there one more?
Probably.
Okay.
I think there was a multi-complex point in there somewhere.
All right, Matthew, share your three thoughts on Claudia and Rex.
My first thought was that I really liked the kind of melange of different influences that we do see in the gods and in, you know, the take of this. I'm not sure if they leave reality or what, but you definitely have that moment where, okay, we're in a strange kind of world, and also your sister's a rhino, which I'm pretty sure is one of Rodrigo's favorite movies.
Yeah.
But I really felt like the various influences on the art felt really fresh to me. And maybe it's just that I'm used to seeing, you know, people who grew up reading George Perez and drawing George Perez type characters. This does not feel like a standard comic book reading experience for me. And I really like that.
Yeah.
And I think the second thing and the biggest thing for me is this is a story about feminine power and three different takes on feminine power, which I kind of liked. And I feel like the weirdly almost confusing thing where suddenly mom has powers kind of felt to me like those stories you hear of a woman who's like, oh, my child is trapped under a car, so I'm literally going to lift the car off of my child. I mean,
they reference that in the book.
Yeah.
Yep. And I feel like that's really cool. And of course, you have, you know, Rex being young and trying to deal with everything from her perspective. It's still a very, you know, very cute, feminine young girl. And then in between, you have Claudia kind of literally coming of age and dealing with all of this. And I liked that take, and I liked the feeling of it felt like a very, very modern story and a very cool take on three different types of feminine power. And my third thing is I agree with you that it goes really fast, and I loved that. Sometimes you just want this is the equivalent of like a really, really solid done in one role play session for me, or just like a movie that you catch on a Thursday night on Cinemax and you don't know what it is, but it's all of a sudden Jason Bateman is in it and he's this weird serial killer and he's, you know, dating the woman from Dr. Marsden and the Wonder Woman. I don't know, but I really liked that. And I liked the way it all just went, okay, strange things are happening, crazy magical realism. We're all going to deal with our stuff. We're all going to take a moment. And then that little last panel thing is like, there could be another volume, you guys.
Could be, but it's been such a long time. That's one of the things that I'm like, surely we would have heard something by now. It's been, you know, 8 years or 6 years or whatever it's been. So it's been a long time.
Lion Forge go under?
No, Lion Forge is Oni Press. Lion Forge bought Oni Press. And so there is still Oni Press and Lion Forge, even though Oni Press, I believe, is supposed to be the imprint of Lion Forge. But Lion Forge has just kind of quietly just stepped into the background and let Oni Press just do all of the Oni Press things that they do. Yeah, that's kind of the deal with that. I guess the ending is that there is a lot of loss, right? The three characters have come together over the loss of husband and father. And one of the things that is going to free the gods and relaunch this new world of gods is a blood sacrifice. And so there is this thing that happens at the end where they're deciding who's going to make the ultimate sacrifice. And the ultimate sacrifice turns out to be something else, because a blood sacrifice doesn't necessarily have to be a loss of life. It could just be somebody who is coming of age, a young woman who is going through her menstrual cycle. And so that is how they get out of that. I thought that was very clever, but at the same time, we've seen that exact same gimmick used to power magic. And so I was a little disappointed in that.
Yeah. So it is interesting, because I think we're at this tipping point between like you can't do ta-da, the answer was menstrual blood anymore, because it's been done a few times.
Yeah.
But also the tipping point on the other side of just normalized menstrual blood being a plot point, right? Maybe from here on out we go to, and like, you know, you just have a character in a book where their menstrual cycle is a thing and it's not the thing that powers the artifact or changes the world or whatever. Right.
It's just part of the story.
But it's just like part of what happens, right? It's kind of like, you know, ever since, was it like Eowyn takes off her helmet and she's like, I am no man. Ah,
right.
Right. It's like we've seen that a bunch of different times where like that sort of like play on words or something like that enables someone else to do, you know, quote unquote, the impossible or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it is, it's right. Very interesting. Like we could see this become a thing, or we could see like artists in general be like, okay, yeah, we can't do this anymore. We're going to have to like figure out some other way. Like, one of the characters is diabetic and the blood sacrifices them checking their insulin.
Right. And that would be fine with me.
That would be fine.
I mean, I remember something that Roger Ebert once said. He was talking about how part of the thing that he loves about the movie Fargo is that the main character is pregnant and it's not
a plot point. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure. Yeah, no, that
just
is
a pregnant woman.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of what I liked about that ending, even though I do agree with you that, you know, we may have seen that whole, this is, you know, the source of the magic power or whatever before, but I feel like that worked for me for that reason, simply because Marge Gunderson happens to be a police officer and a really good detective. And also, you know, she's 8.5 months, 9 months pregnant, whatever it is. And I feel like that is the kind of thing that I can't remember who somebody said, it may be just an explanation of, you know, Chekhov's gun. Don't have anything in your story that's not specifically related to this plot spine. And I feel like that really limits your storytelling. I feel like you can have these moments. You can have these things where the answer turns out, you know, the real magic was the friends that we made along the way. And also, you know, the cramps that we made along the way. Who knows?
Yeah, no, I just was like, just because, and this would be a good time to have Ashley on the show because she's into some of the witchy stuff and is also a woman and can and express on this. And there may be some things that we are missing in relation to magical powers and the menstrual cycle that we as guys do not get or understand. But at the same time, we've seen, who was it, Nico? Is that who it is over in The Runaways? That's mm-hmm. how she's able to use her powers without cutting herself all the
right.
time. Mm-hmm. For me, I was just like, oh, yeah, The Runaways did that. And now, 10 years later, we're seeing something similar happen in this book. So, I mean, it's not a huge letdown. I mean, it wasn't this radical new idea or surprise to
right.
me. But it was just kind of one of those things that's like, and maybe because this is only maybe the second time that I've encountered it, maybe it wasn't that big of a deal as it probably was when Nico reveals it. But I think that if there's a third book that I read within the next 5 years that uses this same gimmick, then it's just like, yeah, okay, people need to not.
So the problem is that it is used as a surprising sort of like flip about to say why this character is doing something that maybe the bad guys weren't expecting her to be able to do or how she's able to not die in this particular situation. Right. It's a little bit of a plot twist. And that's the issue, right? It's like, I would probably be okay with menstruation being like a theme in a book. Right. Or, you know, if you think of something like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, like the very first movie where like Buffy gets like cramps when vampires mm-hmm. are around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Again, lots of problematic stuff all over the creation and life of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but that's one way to incorporate it. Maybe not the best way, but that's a theme, right? If you've ever played Dark Souls, like Dark Souls is like thematically very menstrual. Like there, it's all about pregnancy and childbirth and loss of a child. And umbilical cords, and also about like big female archetypes and stuff like that. I haven't played all the way through it. I've just watched a lot of videos on it. So it's like in that stuff, I never felt like, oh, this is done. like we've already seen this, you can have menstruation as a plot point or a theme or something else, as long as it's not this little twisty twist, which we've just seen a bunch of times. It's like anytime the bad guys reveal to be like a family member of the main mm-hmm. character, right? Nowadays, everybody's like, oh, we've seen this. Right. So yeah, I think we're kind of on this tipping point of like, do we keep doing this or do we like give it a rest for a little while?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Final thoughts from you, Matthew.
I like this book. I did not expect that I would like it. It felt like something where just from reading the description, I was like, oh, maybe this is not going to be my jam. Mm-hmm. But actually reading the book and sitting down and maybe there's a lesson in there, not just for me, but for anyone, that actually experiencing the book made for an entirely different experience than what I expected it to be. And I really liked it.
Rodrigo, final thoughts from you.
If I said Dark Souls, I meant to say Bloodborne. But also, for me, this was a book with like a cute rhino on the cover,
yeah,
and it really hooked me into everything else that was going on. I like this book top to bottom. Like this is one of like my favorite books that we've done here on the podcast.
Oh, okay, very cool. Oh. I kind of halfway read through this when it first came into our possession for the review, and so I was kind of like, oh, this is weird. This also has a lot of gods. This is right up Rodrigo's alley. I can see why he likes it. I'm not sure I'm going to dig it. Kind of like what Matthew said. But then when I sat down to read it, I was like, no, this is a very interesting story. I would like to know a little bit more than what we're given, but maybe that's part of the charm, is that not knowing, you know, the mystery box kind of stuff is part of the charm that makes you treasure the book or enjoy the book a lot more. So for me, if you see it lying around somewhere, definitely pick it up, get it from your library, go to the comic book store and see if they have a back issues of it. It was an enjoyable read, and I liked it, to paraphrase a Rodrigo right there. So there we go. That is where we're going to wrap it up this week. Thank you so much for listening. If you found value in any of this discussion, if you found some thoughts that make you go, if you found some thoughts that make you go, how dare you, sir, then the best place to share those thoughts is over on our Patreon page, where you can find even more fun, including the Major Spoilers Podcast pre-show, access to our secret channels on the Major Spoilers Discord server, and a whole lot more. Find out more at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Next week, we are diving into some Grant Morrison Batman comics. Why? Because we know that you love comics, and we do too, and we will talk with you soon.
Fat the X-ray vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose, I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. If I'm Stark Raven rich like a man of iron, I might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being in the Middle East with a King Santo and soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2024 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC. What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.